So I wanted to talk tonight about this sacred life. And I mentioned a little bit of it in the suggestions with meditation, of just being in this moment and allowing it to be whatever it is as it comes and as it goes. And that's sacred, and that this is sacred, that life is sacred, that all beings are sacred. And I, in some ways, have so much to say about it, that I feel so passionately about it. So we'll see where this goes. But this space is sacred, that we've come here. And what does that mean? We've come here and created a safe environment. We've created a place to be together in community, in harmony. We've created a space of like minds, of a way that we can be together to care for one another, that feels safe, that is honoring, just as the day of non-harming that this practice speaks of, as non-harming, of not only non-harming but caring for and having reverence for all of life. So there's one story that is often told in the beginning about the Buddha, and of someone coming along and finding this person and not quite knowing who or what this person was, and the person saying, "Excuse me, who are you? Are you a wise man? Are you a this? Are you a that?" The Buddha says, "No, no. Well, are you religious? Are you..." He just goes on with many, many, many different terms, and the Buddha says, "No, no. Well, who are you then? Or what are you?" And the Buddha simply says, "I am awake." And so what does that mean? And so that's what this path is about, is coming to know what that means. What does it mean for us today? What did it mean a few days ago or years ago, depending on how long our practice is, or our life, what state our life was or is in now? So what does it mean to feel awake? For me, it feels it's being in touch with what's going on, being connected to what's going on, feeling the passion, the aliveness for whatever it is, coming to have respect, honor, even as we say, even for the good stuff, for the bad stuff, for all of that, all of whatever it is. And that it's not really so much good stuff and bad stuff, although we definitely feel that. And we more name it in Buddhist terms as pleasant and unpleasant, or that which is not necessarily either one, that maybe we're not quite sure what it is. And so there's all of this wide range, and it can all be sacred. That there's no reason for the live flowers and the dead flowers. There's no reason for them to both not be sacred. That it takes live flowers perhaps to see the beauty, and it takes the death of a flower to make the earth fertile, or to give seeds to bear new flowers. And the same true of us and our experiences, that our experiences, we have pleasant and unpleasant experiences, and some of them are thought of as mistakes and shunned, and some of them are learning experiences. But they're all sacred, because there is no one way. We can't have it just pleasant. We can't have just what we would prefer to have. That it's all there for us. So, how can we embrace all of these things? And that's a lot of what the practice is all the time. And some, for me, it's as much learning how from my mistakes as it is from the pleasanter experiences or the happier experiences. Sometimes I learn a lot more from over the years how I've mistreated myself or mistreated others. I said, ah, that feels so painful. I don't want to do that again. How what can I learn from this, and how can I do this differently next time? So that's the food in it, the richness in it, the sacredness in that is to when we embrace all our experiences, then we're able to benefit from them. We're able to nurture them. We're able to see them as they are and see, oh, okay, is this wholesome or unwholesome? Is this something that I want to continue or is this not? But if we push it aside, we're not so able to do that because we're not really getting the full view of it. Just as if there were a dead flower in this group, which I haven't found one yet, there might be, but we're just to pluck it out, but not see that that's what we were doing. We may not appreciate the life that's here quite so much. Now, for one experience that veers off a little bit, but in this sitting group that I have, there's one of the women has cancer, and she'd been coming a number of times. I also work with a number of people with cancer. And so she's been coming to this group for a while. And one evening it was raining. And she was sitting in meditation and just crying and crying. And at the end afterwards she said, you know, I didn't know that I would be here to experience the rain again. So the preciousness of the rain that she could feel as if it was the first time, as a sacred thing. But the rain is sacred too. And of course, a lot of us think of rain in that way anyway, of nurturing and feeding. But can we bring that kind of freshness to our experiences? And how do we do that? How do we bring that freshness in? There are certain things that we do. You can reflect on them and see, what do I do that brings that about for me? How is it in my life? How is it in my experience? When I come to enjoy the sound of a stream, or maybe even the footsteps on the floor. I was listening. There's quite a lot of movement here in this space. Where I am, the movement is more outside, near a freeway. So there's a lot of noise in that way. Here, there's a lot of internal. Well, there's probably a lot of internal within our own bodies too, but internal within this space, and just feeling like, oh, it feels like the movement in a shoe. We're all in this shoe together. We're all in this space together, and we have the squeaks and crunches and the softness and the hardness. So that's one way of just looking at things with what they call a beginner's mind, or a new way, or with interest, with curiosity. What is this? What is this experience? So that's one of the questions that I ask myself. What is this pain? What are these sensations? What is this sadness? What is this anger? What is this joy? Where do I feel it in my body? How can I come to know this? So just those questionings, that inquiry, brings us into delving deeper into the sacred, into connecting with whatever it is, in whatever way. And so when we do this, when we're able to ask those questions, or to sit with the experiences, the questioning, then we can get that new experience. It takes us deeper into, or it takes us into connecting with, takes us into the potential of understanding. What keeps resonating in the back of my mind is sitting the 3-month retreat at Barry, and going in with one of my teachers at that, there was Sharon Salzberg. And I would be in and out of there in a minute or two. So these are often people are there for 10 minutes or 15 minutes. And I don't know that I had more than one or two sessions with her that went beyond 2 or 3 minutes. So, this one time, she had me there for quite some time. But it just, I was having difficulty with my roommate. Sometimes you have single rooms, sometimes there's double rooms. So I had a roommate, and so she was asking me about it, and I was saying different things, you know, the stories we get into. Oh, this is going on, and this is going on, and so just sat there and go deeper. And so, or what does this mean? So then I said a little bit more of what was going on. Go deeper. So just connecting with the experience, the bodily sensations, the feelings that are there, the emotions that are there. So coming to know, what is this unpleasantness, or maybe even the pleasantness? Some of us avoid the pleasant. I know for a long time, and still do sometimes, avoid excitement because it's so much energy. And as a kid, I was asked or told to not, don't move around so much, or don't get so excited, you know. So just keeping it inside, then for me to experience it, what is this quality of excitement? And how is it different from joy, or happiness, or passion, or lust? So there's just so many different things, so many different experiences that we have. So this Buddha nature of waking up to the moment is that this honoring and going within the sacred of the moment. And then there's the Dharma, the path. and the teachings which lead us along this path, which actually I've already spoken of too, but they can be gone into with this inquiry, with the questioning. Can also go into it with using the four foundations of mindfulness, which I mentioned a little bit, but just going deeper into the breathing experiences, the bodily experiences, the pleasant and the unpleasant, the contact, the feeling tone, the quality, the attitude that we bring to it. So you can go in with all of this richness into it. No matter where we are in our practice, whether we're one day into the practice or 50 years into the practice, we still have that opportunity to go deeper and to explore. And so if we're having difficulty with just the questioning, just the question of inquiry, we can think, okay, how can I relate to this within the four foundations of mindfulness? You can ask that question, or on the Noble Eightfold Path, relating to thoughts and actions and speech, livelihood, what area that you're working with, whether it's in your work environment or your home environment, whether you're just working with speech on your own, maybe it's even internal speech. That can be some of the most difficult, are all of the thoughts or judgments, criticisms that plague us ourselves. So we can just, with a embrace it in the way that this woman did with experiencing the rain, not knowing that was going to not knowing that that experience would happen again, not quite sure that this experience of anger is going to happen again. Well, maybe let me just see what's here. What is this? Where do I feel it in my body? What's this about? And then over time, over years, over relationships, or whatever, oh, this is anger. Got it. Okay, thank you. You know, so that we have a clue. We get more and more clues as to what's really happening here, rather than what we believe or what we want to believe is happening. The other part that I also spoke to is this space here, the sacredness of this space here, and that this is this Sangha. Our friends, our like-minded folks here are what helps us along the path, what helps us, helps remind us, gives us support, and we give one another support. That we can have Sangha friends or buddies, that we can actually have in our daily lives or weekly lives, or even just checking in on the way in or the way out of this space here, of a way of waking up. Hello, how are you today? What's going on for you in this moment? Whatever those words are, whatever that can be for you. Putting on the shoes, feeling the feet moving into the shoes, and then saying to the person next to you, my shoes are very warm or soft or hard or whatever, and what's my experience? So you can share in little bitty ways and many other ways, having dinner together, taking a walk, whatever it is, and that bringing in the moment, bringing in the sacred. And there's also the formal way to make it sacred of taking refuge in the Buddha, taking refuge in the Dharma, taking refuge in the Sangha. And I don't know if you all have a regular time in your Sangha that you do it. Some people do it once a month in their Sanghas. Some have a particular day-long or evening that's focused on that. Some have study groups that go into it. I know for me, it took, I would say, at least 12 years before I really had honoring the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha as sacred acts, as feeling it in my body, speaking it out loud, doing formal bows. It really took me that long before I really saw the meaning, felt the meaning, and the appreciation, the deep gratitude and the deep appreciation for the practice and for the richness of it. But just really feeling that connected. And sometimes I do it and I don't feel so connected. And other times I just begin and I feel very connected. So it's not also not that we're not going, we don't have a mission or a goal in that we do this so that we will feel the sacredness of it, or we do this so that we will have a particular experience, a particular enlightenment, or a particular understanding. But we do it with a sense of wholeness that everything is sacred, and that this life is sacred. That every movement and every word can be sacred. Not that we'll always be aware of it, but that we have that opportunity, just as the Buddha, in awakening, feeling the wakefulness, that we have that opportunity to feel awake, to feel alive, to feel connected to the truth. And sometimes it's easier than other times. But to me, just having this calling it sacred, to me, helps. And maybe you have other words that you use that help you. Maybe it's connection or interconnectedness, or I don't know. Whatever helps you to be awake. Maybe it's just awake that works. So in the next 10 minutes or so, I'd like to invite you to explore what works for you, share what works for you, ask whatever questions or concerns are on your mind around this or something else that's going on for you. Could be an experience that you had lately to help bond you or help you realize the experience. There's that I went to the restroom before I came in here, and there's the sign, you know, with the kitty cats in the toilet, and it really brings it home. It could have just been a simple note, but having those little kitty cats there really brought in the humor and brought in the aliveness of, oh, you know, there needs to be care here too. So,
Any questions or things that you use to say, well, what works for you? Yeah, Lewis.
To say something that works and something that doesn't work, I find that when a morning is a very quiet one, it's really easy to appreciate how wonderful the sun is, or the weather, or and food, and just the feeling of being alive. Mm-hmm. And when I feel rushed and harried and harassed, somehow it's really hard to get whole, just to get that presence of mind to appreciate what's actually happening.
Yes.
So for me, that it's kind of pivotal how I get through my morning sit, because I can either come out of it really appreciative or kind of being taught and turned around from a sense of control or appreciation.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But you still sit. Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah, the more difficult ones are just that. More difficult. Not as easily acceptable or not as easily spoken of as... Mm-hmm. Yeah. But we all have them.
Interesting day today. I did a few things that I don't normally do. I had a couple of meetings that normally I would have a lot of anxiety over. But I had just decided that I had no idea what was going to happen, and I was just going to meet the day. And with some sort of curiosity.
Mm-hmm.
And today has been one of those sacred days.
Mm.
Where a lot of, where I've just allowed the space for not knowing or not expecting anything.
Uh-huh.
So it's nice for you to talk about it. Mm. Because it was just an easy day to smile at, and I think a lot of that came from not having any expectation.
Uh-huh.
And being a bit more curious.
Uh-huh.
About meeting the day.
Yeah, great, thanks. And was it all pleasant? trick question.
Well,
no.
I can't recall anything unpleasant. Uh-huh. There were far more positive things to the day than if I hadn't have done those things that mm-hmm. I would have previously been apprehensive about.
Yes.
You know, if I had worried about, well, is this the most efficient way I'm spending my time? I don't know. I just decided to go. You know,
yes.
Just to go see. And, you know, or I just, it was a lot more release and curiosity than, and being open to possibility.
Uh-huh. Great.
So I didn't. There may have been unpleasant things, but I didn't see them.
Mm-hmm.
There probably were unpleasant things there.
Yeah. I guess in a way it was a little bit of a trick question, but I mean there's pleasant and there's unpleasant generally, but it's more when we don't have that curiosity or we have set expectations wanting a certain outcome, then the unpleasant we tend to fixate on, make them larger, get them, have them take up more space than they could. Just similar to what Lewis was saying in terms of your sitting, you know, when it's more fidgety or whatever, some other things going on, it's a little more difficult at that time to accept it, and yeah.
But amazingly, I felt that there was much more. I mean, I did notice the traffic on that side of the freeway was a lot heavier than the side I was on. The parking space when I went to park was right there.
Mm-hmm.
I did did leave my keys in an unexpected place and I had to go back, then that was one, one thing that I went,
yeah,
there goes mindfulness.
Yeah.
And, but, you know, on the whole,
yes,
a lot of good things.
Yes. So the pleasant and the unpleasant all happened, yet it was just all a part of experience. Yeah. Yeah.
I had a question with referring when you were saying, what is this experience? What is this sadness?
Mm-hmm.
And or whatever the experience is happening.
Mm-hmm.
And there isn't really an answer, is there? I mean, any answer I make to myself is just an arbitrary connection that I might believe or not believe, or might be more valid than others. So I was just wondering if you could talk a little bit more about that.
Thank you.
What is this?
Yeah, thank you, because that will help me delve into the question more. Yeah, so the question, what is this sadness? What is this experience? Whatever, is then to help you not tune into the story or trying to figure out sadness, but then actually going to the bodily sensations. Where is this, maybe, is a better question. Where is this in my body? Where do I feel it? Is it in my chest? Is it in my jaw? Is it, you know, in my stomach? And what's going on there? So then you can feel the heat or the tightness or the coolness or the knots or the twisting or pulsation or whatever it is. And so then you go into that. So that you can experience on a body, within the body of sensation. What is this sadness? And then go into that. And then sit. And then let go and say, now what? Not now what is it, but what's happening now? What's true in this moment?
So it's letting go of the story and the content and just going into the experience of it, the body experience.
And then it may go into deeper sadness. It may change into something totally different as a nature of things to rise and pass away. So change is inevitable, but it's not to see a change either, but it's more just to explore the truth of it, to explore, to come to know it as it is. That, yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. Okay, that's kind of a couple of questions. So you're talking about physical pain,
or emotional.
You are more talking about emotional. Okay.
So you get, like, you get angry. You become angry at something, and you know you're angry, so you say, "I'm angry." But don't you need to figure out why you're angry so that anger can dissipate and you can then.
Well, sometimes. I mean, it's a little tricky. But if you have time when you're feeling your anger and you can go into where you feel it in your physical body, because anger lives in many different parts of the body. It tends to live in a couple of the same places, but for some people it goes one place first or not. So the more we're able to sit and explore the sensations. If you're going on about a story, then you can
say, what is going, shifting from the story to the experience, and then, oh, this is anger, or you can feel it in your body and know from the experience of sitting with it in your body, oh, this is anger. Is this anger? Is it rage? Is it more of holding back from the anger? Is it, you know, so you can through exploring the bodily sensations and allowing what's true to arise, you can name it. You can come to name it just as you can come to name a long breath, calm breath, that kind of thing. And so it takes a lot of time, takes patience. It helps if you can do it with less judgment, or not the critic that we tend to be when things that we don't like arise, which is a trick in itself or a practice in itself. So it does take time to do that, to recognize it. And then in time, you'll recognize angry thoughts, angry feelings earlier in the stage. And yes, depending on what it is and depending on who it's with, whether it's appropriate or not to address it, you know, how, when, that kind of thing, we all have to work with. From experience to experience. So there isn't a short answer. And then the other piece around the practice about being with the truth and responding, so there's will be less reactivity. It's not you're not doing this so that it'll go away, but you're doing it to understand it so that you can make wise choices as to how to be with it. Also, when we're sitting with the pleasant and the unpleasant, because that's what we've got here, is we've got pleasant experiences, we've got unpleasant experiences, and we've got experiences that are maybe a little bit of both, or maybe not quite one or another. So these are all part of life, all part of nature. So it's not to choose one over another, although we do it. I do it all the time. But to have less reactivity to the pleasant and the unpleasant. So yeah, of course we're going to like the pleasant, and probably not so much liking the unpleasant that arises. But we don't necessarily have to react to them, or we can learn to react less to them. So that, oh, listen to those, you know, into the creakiness of the shoes, and gosh, does it have to keep going? Why can't people come in at the same time? And, you know, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And just, hearing the vibration and the creakiness and the hardness and the softness and the closeness. And so there's a different way to approach, unpleasant. And maybe sometimes just, unpleasant. And when we can do that, that's building on that piece of acceptance and including all. And that's that sacredness of inclusion.
You were asking about circumstances where you feel part of the sense of the sacred, and I definitely feel that out in nature.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's very easy there. Yeah, and the Buddha
did most of, or sat in nature a lot, practiced in nature a lot, and I enjoyed sitting out in nature also, doing slow walks out in the woods. Was there more you wanted to say about? Okay. Oh, uh-huh.
You were cooking for
yes.
Very much.
Yeah.
And it was just an incredible experience, kind of reconnecting with something that I've always felt ever since I was a child.
Mm-hmm.
A sense of really feeling my true human nature.
Yeah.
Out in nature.
Yeah. Yeah. Great. Mm-hmm. Thanks. And it is important to feed that, to feed whatever helps us in our practice, to honor our practice, to training a puppy, you know, how you, this always Jack Kornfield talks about this puppy on the paper and how you bring the puppy back to the paper each as it starts to, you know, do a little puddle somewhere. You bring it back to the paper and you don't smack the dog and yell at the dog and kick the dog and like we do to ourselves a lot of times. You know, to help learn. It's much easier to learn when we can. Treat ourselves with kindness, treat ourselves with respect, and say, oh, I'm having a rough sit. You know, this is a rough one. It's just to acknowledge that. It's okay, sweetheart, you know. The next one, who knows? This one is rough. It's just the way it is. You know, so to do that, to make that initial contact with ourselves in that way, of this anger. Whew, wow, am I angry? You know, to bring humor into it, or humor, kindness, those are great things. If you're having a hard time sitting, and you know going outside helps, go outside. No reason we need to sit inside. You know, yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, of course, in my life, I've gone through many different experiences of good and bad communities, all of it. But I guess everybody.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm just thinking that what is really, really sad and makes things almost impossible is when something happens and that thing, whatever it is, makes us feel bad inside, like real bad.
Uh-huh.
I had an experience. I had some of the time, but going to somewhere, it's just like to work, for example. So like, I always have to be that 10 minutes late.
Oh, uh-huh.
It doesn't matter how much time I have. So today I had to completely face it, of course. Not that I did this before, but in a different way, maybe. Arabic, you know, Russian, whatever it is. It's just, yeah. And before it was like,
mm-hmm.
Whereas, where I feel like I have this quality, I don't have to be necessarily on time to be acceptable or good at what I do, for example. So it's like when I went to work today, I was able to just, you know, talk to my supervisor and say, you know, in fact, I was at ease. I was, first, I admitted to myself, acceptable. It's no excuse. I mean, I just have this situation being late.
Mm-hmm.
And then I thought that in different circumstances, you know, you pull people up and it's not so good. But I was able to look at it logically rather than saying that, oh, I'm bad now, so I have to cover that. You know, by doing that, it's like, okay. And like what she said to me is like, yeah, and it was very humane. It wasn't like somebody is lower because of his leg or because of that.
Mm-hmm.
It was just on an equal level. And it's like, okay, the ball is in my to be untimely. And this is just an example of saying that I don't, you know, have to necessarily feel bad about who I am or what I am, or because of whatever it is that's happened. So I think that makes a difference. And just one more thing is that yesterday I was here. That happened to me one other time. You know, we're among people, and so we like as if like we're all friends, and I didn't know anybody, of course, and just seeing them, so I'm not a friend to me. But it was like, you know, we're all basically come from the same place, and you know, but somehow I was here last night, and then I kind of like sensed that togetherness. And just the
word friendship
would come to my mind. Yeah. I don't know. It's just there's different barriers that are there. It seems to be kind of separate from myself, you know. Like judging myself.
Right.
It's hard to even, you know, judging, like saying, okay, I judge things, and then I can either look at it logically without really feeling bad
about
judgment. Or, you know, so it can go.
Yeah, it's a long process, especially for some of us who judge ourselves a little bit more than others might. It is a long process, and just to say, just to be patient and caring, like you said, you know, you were able to do at that time. It's not one of those you go through one course or 5 years and you're done. You know, it's a long gradation, and then there's a point where you say, oh, I thought I was done with this. But then you say, okay, well, you know, I recognize this a lot sooner this time. So you can do these kinds of things with yourself. So you could just give yourself as much credit as you can for where you are, just like what you did with the being late. It's not the person. It may have to do with the action, whatever that is, and then how we see ourselves or how we respond or how we allow others to influence us through their response or reaction. So it's just to say it's a long course. It's a life. Yeah. And sorry, we need to stop now, but I'll be happy to talk with you a little more afterwards. Okay. So let's just take the last 5 minutes to sit, and I'll guide us in a little metta, and then the sharing of the merit. So sitting in metta is a position of ease. So whatever, in whatever position you feel ease, it's a practice. And I know a number of you have done metta. I'll just say the phrases that I use, and you can repeat them to yourself, or if you have your own phrases, you can use those. So there's four phrases, and then we'll repeat them three times. One at a time. So just feeling the body sitting and feeling the ease. And allowing the breath to be centered at the heart and the chest. And feeling the warmth. And just feeling a gentle, loving kindness in this center of the heart. And then from this place, experiencing the phrases as you can. May I be safe, free,
from inner and outer harm. May I be happy and peaceful. May I be healthy of body and mind. May I care for myself with joy and ease. May I be safe, free from inner and outer harm. May I be happy and peaceful. May I be healthy of body and mind. May I care for myself with joy and ease. May I be safe, free from inner and outer harm. May I be happy and peaceful. May I be healthy of body and mind. May I care for myself with joy and ease. I'm repeating the phrases to yourself one more time, and just feeling the heart open. And then including one another here. Those that are here tonight. And those that are here other nights and days. All of those in Sangha. And Gil. And other teachers that have been here. And sharing the merit that we've acquired here tonight through this practice, through this Sangha, the immediate Sangha and the larger Sangha. To include all beings everywhere. May all beings everywhere, without exception, be safe and free from harm. May all beings everywhere, without exception, feel happy and peaceful. May all beings everywhere, without exception, care for themselves and one another with joy and ease. May all beings everywhere, without exception, live and be in peace. Thank you.